Chapter 12. Draga is understandably resistant after she explains.
What?
I'll be right behind you. Zelda runs awkwardly through the calf-high water, coiling Arbiter's bridle around her palm. She tugs the massive horse out from the rocky overhang. He snorts and shakes his handsome head, resolutely undisturbed by anything. Not the scent of blood, not the iron stench of magic, not the thunder or the lightning, nothing. It is, Zelda thinks with startling clarity, somewhat annoying that the most level-headed creature in their group is a goddamned horse.
You can't be serious, Draga says.
There is only one horse. It's your horse, so you're going to take him, says Zelda reasonably, checking and rechecking Arbiter's tack, grabbing Link's recurve from the saddle, a spare bowstring, and a quiver fat with ungarnished arrows. Link's only just gotten her comfortable with the trick to accelerant bolts, and they'll do her little good in the rain. She slaps the bridle in Draga's palm, ignoring his continued protests. She can't, in fact, hear any of it, because she's focusing very, very hard on her hands. They're shaking. The rain roars in the canyon. Hold still, please, she says, swatting Draga's elbow.
Are you listening to me? You can't trust me with his life, Zelda.
Draga's voice is very quiet now. His arms around Link's shoulders and knees tighten a little. Water runs in a steady stream from the line of Link's fingertips, his arm hanging slack as Draga clutches him.
I'm with you, Draga says. I'll fight this with you, but you can't trust me like this. Not right now.
I need the sheath, she says, very reasonably. Draga stares, but holds still. Zelda calmly reaches under Link's back, unbuckles the clasp that hooks the shoulder strap into his belt. Then she undoes the buckle at his waist and carefully slides the bandolier from his torso. The belts and sheath slip easily from Link's back. They're dripping wet. Leather dark with rain and the sheath shining blue and gold. Link, still quiet in Draga's arms, doesn't respond at all. Zelda stands there for a moment, staring at her partner of a century plus. Link's always seemed huge to her, despite all the physical facts to the contrary. He's always felt like a giant within the scope of her world. He seems small now, like he seemed small in that meadow at the foot of the Dueling Peaks 100 years ago. One hand moves instinctively toward him to touch his hair or his chest. She stops. She steps back. She pulls the master sword from her belt where she'd shoved it like a kitchen knife. She sheathes the blade in one smooth stroke. When had she learned that? And slings it over her shoulder, pulling and buckling Link's bandolier over her chest. They're about the same size, really. It fits her fine. She yanks it tight and straps the quiver to her hip. She realizes, very belatedly, Draga has been yelling at her the entire time she's been gearing up, and it's then, only when she's finished, that she looks up into his face and feels a sudden, violent rush of panic. Animal and intense, hot and hemorrhaging into her head.
I can't take Link to Gerudo Town,
Draga is saying, like it's the fourth or fifth time. Zelda turns away, one hand over her mouth, tears rushing into her eyes. Arbiter, waiting patiently, nickers at her.
Zelda, you need to take him.
Zelda whips around so fast her hair swings a full circle and slaps across her soaking neck and shoulders. No! Her voice is higher, rawer than she wanted, but too late now. She swallows, and in Gerudo she says, Listen to me. I would take him myself, but between us, it's you that can protect Link if you come to trouble on the road. It's a day's ride, and you can get there fastest, and I will not be distracted now in crisis from the goal. We need to get you off the road too, Draga. That's just as vital as getting Link to help.
Draga shakes his head, rain dripping from his chin. He would never forgive me for leaving you alone.
Well, it's a good thing he's not conscious to tell you what to do. I, the person in question, am telling you to get on the bloody horse and get Link out of here.
Draga raises his voice. You can't put me alone on the road with Link.
She raises her voice right back. You won't hurt him.
But what might I do in his defense?
His breathing is a touch too fast, his expression strained.
What if the demon finds us? What if I can't drive off the...
Zelda doesn't wait. She slaps her hands together, closes them like she's taking hold of something in the ether. She grips it, pulls her fists apart from one another, and in the space between her fingers, a gossamer of golden air shimmers like a shawl, dripping a radiance of light in the rain. Where the raindrops pass through its glow, they hum. She shakes her hands, and the shawl flares, a cat's cradle of light interwoven in lines of protection that she knows from ancient instinct only. She shakes it again and again, until the spell in her fingers billows like a bedsheet, and then, when its folds seem to hold an ocean, she throws it around Draga's shoulders, pulling it tight beneath his neck. It falls around him, flickers, then fades against his cloak, until there's nothing but the hum. She closes her fists in his collar, the one made of fabric, not light. Nothing will touch you between here and there, Draga. She pulls him forward, pressing her mouth to his forehead, and a ripple of light passes from her lips to the amber circlet that holds his hair back, a gridwork of gold lit like a crown across his brow. It flares, then fades, infused with heat. She pulls back, whispering, "By the power of the fucking goddess, now go!" Draga does not argue with her this time. He turns to Arbiter and mounts up, with Link seated in front of him. Holding him tight with one arm, gripping the bridle with the other, he pulls Arbiter around, hard, and the massive warhorse wheels, hooves throwing up water as he comes down facing west. Zelda steps back. Draga looks over his shoulder at her once more, and she wills her face to a cold determination. Whatever he needs to see in her in this moment, she wills herself to be that. He turns forward again. Draga lowers his head, eyes fixed on that dark horizon. In Gerudo, he says,
"Outrun the sunset, great king."
And Arbiter takes off. Zelda, in her life, has never seen an animal move the way Arbiter does in that moment, faster than ever before, less a horse than a blur born of fire and ash, galloping at his full and impressive stride. The black and red stallion roars down the valley, flanks rippling, a thunder of hooves leaving a wake behind him. Zelda can hear the rain humming like a fading note from a harp string, the telltale song of her protection spell as it draws power from the rains. Were it not raining this day in the desert, her spell would never have worked. And Zelda stands, fixed for a moment, watching Draga's back receding into the distance. There's a curve in the valley. He is past it in seconds. It occurs to Zelda only after Draga is gone that she hasn't been alone since that day Link brought Ganon down with her, that Link has been with her ever since, just moments away, always near, suddenly, like a spool of thread unwinding into a labyrinth, so fast it burns her fingers. On the other end, home, rapidly receding, pulling away from her until the thread is run out, except the spool is still held in the machinery of her heart, and when it finally rips free at the root, she falls forward to her hands and knees, water sliding around her wrists. Zelda presses a fist against her chest, feels a flare in the back of her right hand, and even through the water, the glow of the Triforce shines like a piece of sunlight through a crack in the world. Then it fades, and she feels so cold suddenly. A raw hollow in her chest where there had been something before. A weight and warmth the size of a sleeping bird replaced by an ache now. She shudders, presses both hands to her breast. She gets one leg under her again. She growls, forcing herself to her feet. Link, she whispers. Draga. She fits her fingers to her lips and tries to whistle. The water makes her sputter. She tries again, and this time a high, piercing note echoes down the canyon. She swallows and starts walking, one foot in front of the other, toward the desert. The master sword is strapped to her back, its belts and binds biting at her shoulders and ribs. She wonders if Draga feels it like she does, the wound of separation gaping with the distance. She prays he will not turn around. She wonders if it's less, because he, unlike her, is with Link, at least. Tears heat her eyes. Childishly, she thinks how unfair it is, how unjust that 100 years later, she's slogging alone in the rain toward another battlefield. She lets the tears run in the rain, but keeps walking. Link, she says again, like a prayer. Draga. She keeps walking. She fits her fingers to her lips again and whistles for Maru. Link, she says, walking faster. Draga, I'm right behind you. I'll be there. It's miles to Gerudo Town, and she only just knows the way. She keeps walking, pulling her hair back from her shoulders, angrily twisting it into a rope and knotting it back. She keeps saying their names to herself, over and over quietly as she starts to jog slowly through the water. She wonders if Link ever felt this way, this weight, the crush of it as he cut through the wild without a soul to accompany him. She thinks of him in pieces, through the strange lens of divination and the awareness of rivers and rain. The medium through which she most easily found him during her imprisonment. Link huddled asleep at the foot of a great oak, or resting by a stream, sitting on a beach while the tide came in to tug at his boots, traveling through the wild for the sake of a voice in the wind. She glances over her shoulder at the sword strapped to her spine. Nothing to say? She asks. The sword doesn't answer. Yeah, I thought so, she says, facing forward again. It's unkind, you know, setting us in the way of the darkness twice. Link's right. No one else ever had to do it two times. She picks up the pace of her jogging, breathing harder now, but she keeps up the pace. I can't do this alone. That's the problem, right? That it takes at least two of us to stop the calamity? She huffs. Draga is right. We forgot our history. We should have remembered a third carried the Triforce. The sword still doesn't say anything. Why did Din give Ganon the first piece, I wonder? She's rambling. She knows it. She doesn't care. Was he supposed to be something different? She glances up at the sky. I'm asking you too, by the way. Apologies. I know it doesn't work that way. Link's better at this. I should be better at praying, considering all the practice I have. It seems to me we only come into ourselves in the face of dire adversity, and just once I'd like something to go our way. Which is when she hears the muted clatter of hooves in water. Zelda spins. There, racing through the rain toward her, Maru at a full gallop, shining and white, almost glowing against the stormy dark. She slows to a trot as she nears her mistress, snorting softly and sticking her velvety nose against Zelda's shoulder. Zelda thinks she must be very alone, because she immediately puts her arms around the mare's rain-soaked neck and bursts into tears. Maru calmly tolerates this outburst, and again Zelda wishes for the serenity of horses. Good girl, she whispers, leaning back. She pats Maru's nose. Let's catch up with the boys, huh? It's still raining when Zelda reaches the gates of Gerudo Town. The city shines in the darkness, lit by great wax paper lanterns, so it glows softly orange and red. The skyline of the trade post backlit in gold. At the gate, a trio of war maids wait, dressed in red, each of them 7 feet tall, towering and broad-shouldered. Their hair is bound back for battle, glittering with gold and amber. Their skin hums with protection set in the stones. And it's only now that Zelda recognizes in their magic the community of craft between them and Draga, power drawn up from the earth. Maru pulls up at the gate, cantering a circle while Zelda clambers down. My name is Zelda, she says, rushing the gate. Please, I sent a rider ahead. We know, answers one of the guards. Her eyes are striped in gold and scarlet, dragged back to her temples with fingers. War paint, not makeup. The chief is waiting for you. Riju is indeed waiting for her. She's also younger than Zelda expected. Though Link told her time and again that Riju is all of 13. She's small, dark-skinned, bright-eyed, and beautiful in her sober calm. She waits, seated in the throne room with a stiff-backed anxiety that's visible even as Zelda enters the main hall. When she comes to her feet, gold and amber bangles chime at her wrists, her dark red hair braided back in a way so exactly like Urbosa that Zelda is frozen momentarily by deja vu. You stand before Chief Mikala Riju, says one of the guards. She looms massive, as big, if not bigger, than Draga in build. Are you Lady Zelda, friend of Link? Zelda bows. Yes, thank you for your courtesy in earnest. You have my gratitude and... Riju raises a hand. Never mind all that. Then the chief of the Gerudo, queen of the desert and leader of the true people, comes down from the throne dais, catches Zelda's hand like they are two schoolgirls, and pulls her immediately along toward one of the corridors to the left of the throne. Beside them, her massive guard follows closely. Riju's hand in Zelda's is small and warm, but creased with calluses. She has the strength, even at 13, of a much bigger person. And at this proximity, Zelda can detect the faint floral ethers off her hair. Zelda blinks, overwhelmed briefly, but profoundly by the kindness. Riju seems to take it as a matter of course, however, so she wipes her eyes quickly. He needs you right away, Riju says as they take a flight of stairs down below the throne room. The temperature drops significantly as they descend into the well-cooled underground. Our Kotame have already made a water room, and Draga has made every effort to stave off the curse. You were right to send Link ahead of you, but Draga fears coming to the end of her... A pause here, where Riju visibly mentally corrects herself. He fears coming to the end of his expertise. They come to a large wooden door. On it, about 50 paper warding seals have been plastered, and Zelda recognizes Draga's handiwork. She feels it running through the wood, through the stone itself. It buzzes in the mortar. Riju, unfazed by it, presses her hand to red ribbon wrapped around the handle. The ribbon unwinds and falls to the floor. It's unlocked now. Help Link. The Kotame have held the curse at bay. This place is sacred and hidden, but the breaking of it falls to you. Where's Draga? Zelda pushes her sleeves to her elbows, pushing her hair off her forehead in anxious distraction. Can he help me with this? Is he here? He's got his own curse to worry about. I think you know. Riju bites the consonants off at the end of each word. Link is a very good friend of mine, so whatever you need to make him well, it will be given to you. Riju, all at once, seems very much 13 years old and seems to realize it. She composes herself, features smoothing. She lifts her fine chin and folds her hands together at her waist. After you finish, she says, there are matters we need to discuss, Princess of Hyrule. Zelda blinks. Riju's expression brooks absolutely no argument. She watches Zelda's reaction. Wouldn't you agree? It's strange, after so long keeping the secret, the relief she feels when cornered by the truth. We'll speak then, Zelda says. Riju nods, and Zelda places a hand against the door, feels the protection spells bite her palm like a puppy teething her fingers, before realizing it need not attack. She waits for the magic to slide around her fingers like a handhold, a friend. Then she pushes the door open and closes it behind her. The room is dark. It takes Zelda a moment to realize it's not for lack of light sources in the room, but rather, none of the light penetrates the dark the way it should. The shadows are deeper. There's a shallow channel of water running the perimeter of the room. Zelda has to step over it to reach the middle of the room. There's a thin mattress recessed partially into the stone. On it, Link is sleeping, lying on his back, arms at his sides. He's breathing shallow but steady. Someone has parted his bangs from his forehead, and across the flat of his brow laid a smooth amber stone set into a circuit of gold. There are paper wards plastered to almost every inch of his shirt and trousers, all in Draga's hand. Protection penned in desperate, frantic urgency, and layered by hand like a bandage over a burn. "Where is Draga?" asks the small corner of herself, that even now won't be distracted. Why isn't he here? Link? Zelda kneels carefully at his bedside, pulling her sopping hair behind one ear. Link, I'm here. Can you hear me? He lays quiet, features pale and slack in the dim light. You need to wake up, she says softly. She reaches forward, fitting her hands to his face, sliding her thumbs across his temples. Her throat feels tight around her words. My hero. Her hands begin to glow. You can't sleep now. Then she reaches over her shoulder and she draws the sword that defeats evil. In this small space, the blade faintly gleams. The darkness in the room deepens. The shadow seething, furious, but trapped outside the barrier of running water, smothered by the green things in the room. The spell isn't even a spell. She just holds the blade before her and stares into the flat, luminous silver, glowing like moonstone. Wake up, she says. The hilt heats in her hand. Wake up! She places her left hand over Link's forehead and grips the blade with the other. Wake up! A red bolt punches through the back of her hand, and she watches the golden mark of the Triforce ignite in her skin. Power rushes her, possesses her like lightning, wrist to wrist, and the sword lights up, relentless as sunlight, pure as it's ever burned for Link. The blade becomes a beacon that burns through every writhing shadow. It drives the darkness into the corners of the room, and only then, when the air is clear, does Zelda's magic take hold in Link. The amber stone goes hot beneath her palm, connecting some arcane circuit soul to soul, and Zelda feels like blood being pulled from a vein. Link gasps. His head snaps back into the mattress, the arc of his throat seizing. His scream is stifled as he digs fingers into the blankets. His spine pulls up. His eyes are clenched shut and his teeth bared against it as Zelda pours light into him like an alchemical solution. She can see it like insanity now. The oily seethe of the curse, crackling in geometrics across Link's skin. It's pulled like iron filings to a magnet, rooted to the paper wards and amber stones. They hold a cancerous thing at bay, but she can feel the oldness of the hatred, the layers of decay and dusklight. She can feel how, if left to fester, it would carve a rotten path through Link's soul and throttle him, fully aware and unable to move, to death. Zelda moves on instinct, getting up on one knee and swinging the other over so she kneels with her knight between her thighs. She grabs the sword in two hands and raises it up, pommel to the ceiling, in her fists. "Wake up, Link!" She rears back and with her whole body drives the blade point first into the thin mattress above Link's head. She feels it bite into rock. It burns even when she lets it go and sets her now free hands at Link's jaw and, like a woman breathing into the lungs of a dying swimmer, she seals her lips over his and floods his lungs with liquid light. It's just like breathing. She breathes sunlight into him until she feels it overflow and run like honey from the corner of his mouth to her fingers. Magic tastes like sea salt and biting into the skin of a peach, and Zelda's magic cuts through the curse. It dissolves, and suddenly Link's grabbing her by the back of her head, and she feels what she cannot physically see, how the light in him rekindles like a flame that was smothered, until he's burning from within. He kisses her, hard, catching her lip with his teeth and sucking breath from her mouth. His tongue against hers is a sweep of warmth and iron before he falls back beneath her. He blinks clear blue eyes, breathing hard before his face breaks into a radiantly beautiful smile. "Saved me again," he whispers. "Shut up," she says, tears blurring his stupid grin. He reaches up, his palm fitting against her cheek, the leather in his gloves smelling like rain. His thumb feels rough against her skin as he carefully wipes the tears from where they overrun her eyelashes. He mouths something. It might be "thank you" or "I love you," but in this moment, there's little difference. Zelda takes his hand between her palms and kisses the back of his knuckles until her heart finally stops its hurting. Link smiles still, then looks around, then frowns. "Where's Draga?" Link doesn't exactly kick down any doors or anything, but it's close. He's still quite wobbly once he stands up, which rather spoils his plans to go charging around the Gerudo Palace, yelling for Draga. His plans are doubly ruined when he tears open the door and finds Riju pacing the hallway directly outside. She pivots when she hears the door. Upon seeing Link upright, she immediately lights up, her hands pressed together at her throat, a wild smile opening her features beautifully. "You're all right. Thank goodness." The smile passes instantly into annoyance. Her fists clench. "Idiot, why do you always bring problems when you come here?"
"I'm just so fun and interesting like that," says Link, still leaning on the doorframe for support. He glances at the giant bodyguard still looming in the hallway nearby. "All right, Bellaria?" "Idiot," says the giantess.
Zelda moves to stand at Link's side just in case he falls. "Thank you again, Chief Riju, for your help." She bows her head again slightly. "I don't think I could have broken the curse without you. The wards here are so strong." "The Red Earth loves the true people and will shield them from shadow," says Riju, quoting something it seems. She glances between them. "Are you both well enough to talk? We have pressing matters still to take care of. The Kotame are preparing, and the two of you will need to be ready for the journey to the Shrine of the Seven if you wish to help." She trails off, reading the mounting confusion in their faces as she speaks. "Draga didn't explain this to you on your way here?" Zelda feels two parts of her brain connect in slow motion. "Wait, where is Draga exactly?"
"The Water Shrine," says Bellaria.
The one in the core of our city, which powers all the running water that flows through Gerudo Town, protecting it from what otherwise might come in from the deserts. We intended to give that chamber to Link, but... She glances at Riju, as if to see if she wants to break in before going on. Draga clearly needed our deepest protections more. "What do you mean?" Zelda says, a razor-fine anxiety slicing through her. Riju and Bularia exchange a look. Then Riju folds her arms and asks warily, "How long have you known Mayor Draga? Do you know his history?" "Almost half a year now," Zelda says softly. "I know his history very well. Please tell us what you mean."
"Your friend arrived at the city," says Bularia, when Riju glances significantly her way. "He brought Link to us and explained they'd battled a monster on the road, one that cursed Link to death's door. He asked for the Sanctuary of Water."
Bularia's eyes narrow, her severe features taking on hawkish cold as she speaks.
"He also seemed unsteady upon his arrival, which raised concerns."
Here she glances at Riju.
"Even the chief perceived it, and he submitted to our judgment on the matter. He's sitting with a cadre of stoneworkers and elders in our water shrine presently."
Zelda struggles momentarily with this. "He was unsteady. What do you mean?" "Yes," says Riju. "He tried to take off from the old city to go back for you." Bularia's tone gets a little cold.
"We convinced him it was unwise."
"I agree, but why is that a problem?" "Because," Riju says, "he spoke to us in what my experts assure me is dead Naburian." Zelda blinks. "I don't... Draga's native dialect is Naburian. It's not dead." "You misunderstand," Riju cuts in. "The dialect he used wasn't the modern vernacular of the Highlands. I know that dialect. It's our sister dialect. The tongue he used was ancient Naburian, over 10,000 years dead. He didn't seem to be aware he was speaking it until I pointed it out." She paused to gauge Zelda's stunned stare. "I understand that he's your friend, but speaking in tongues is one of the five signs."
"Signs of what?"
Link says, voice devoid of emotion. "Spiritual rampancy." Riju stares at them in wonder. "How could he not tell you?" "What does that mean?" Zelda says. "Spiritual rampancy is what happens to failed Kotame, Gerudo who lose themselves to their magic. There are five signs of abomination." She holds out a hand and numbers them. "Seeing spirits, gifts of power, demonic visitation, speaking in tongues, then possession." Riju lowers her hand. "We've seen him speak in tongues. Of the other five signs, have you seen the others?" Zelda looks to Link. His stricken expression mirrors hers. Riju goes very quiet then, a small, fleeting despair on her young face. Softly, she says, "How many signs?" A silence. "How many signs have you seen?" Riju's whisper takes an edge.
"He's my friend," Link says, just as quietly. He moves forward now, between Zelda and Riju. "None of this is his fault."
"Do not mistake me," Riju says. Her voice is taut with some restrained emotions. "I don't want to punish Draga, but you need to tell me. He's one of my people. This falls under our laws." "He was coming here to declare his profession," Zelda says. "He's not outside your laws. He needs help. Draga is family," Riju bursts out. "He's my family. Or didn't he tell you that either?" There's a ringing silence then, eaten by the sandstone walls. Riju's hands are clenched at her hips, and there's a smell familiar to Zelda, because it's so often on Link. The smell of ozone, like a precursor to lightning, and it's radiating off of Riju now. From what Zelda understands, Riju's not related to Urbosa, but in this moment, standing in a fury, her spine drawn up, eyes burning and adorned with the colors and trappings of Gerudo Chieftain. Zelda can imagine her calling lightning. So Zelda touches Link's arm, gently moving around him. Draga said he had a cousin. She holds Riju's gaze. He said they were close, and only she knew he would come home with a new name and declare his profession for magic. Zelda's eyes sting unbearably. Is that cousin you, Riju? Stiffly, she nods. He means second cousin, but all the same. Zelda takes this fact, recontextualizes her conversations with Draga in light of it. The impression of homesickness, however distant, and his care meeting the other Gerudo girls, and how everything, every act, every move was on a slow, meandering, but certain path home. Draga different then, not wildly, but slightly, and certainly different to her. His words take on a warmer, gentler color, just as so many other moments. Draga tilts his head.
You two see spirits so easily.
Take on a sinister.
Since the dragons came, I've lost my limits.
And inevitable.
You know your nature now.
Configuration. A road ending in a black desert. Zelda raises her right hand. She doesn't hesitate even a moment. A dull gold radiance gleams just under her skin, three-sided and fine, as the hallway trembles on a silent note singing silver through the air. Zelda offers Riju her hand palm up. She can feel her hair begin to ripple, her clothes flutter on an unnatural current, but Riju stands unflinching in the tide of it, like she expected it. We came to Gerudo Town for Draga, Zelda says. For his people. Because we're trying to protect him. Because he's... She stumbles over it. You know who Link is. You know who I am. But you need to know this. Draga carries the lost piece of the Triforce. She holds Riju's gaze. I know the demon that stalks him now, as we know its acolytes in this world. She closes her hand, and the light fades as she says, The great beast, Calamity Ganon. A rage then in Riju's green eyes. Name the demon, she says. Demise. The name strips the saliva from her tongue as she says it. It seeks to make the same deal as in ancient days, begun anew in Draga. A fleeting despair moves into Riju's eyes then. That's not fair. Her smile is a baring of teeth. Draga isn't. That's everything he strived to prevent, and so much worse. This cannot. She stops, composes herself. We all know the old story that Ganon was born Gerudo. We know it's true, even if we don't know how exactly. It's why our daughters are fed to madness when the magic takes them. Why demons haunt our lives. She reaches out a hand, her fingers brushing Zelda's for just a moment, thoughtlessly, before withdrawing. You're saying the curse that killed Draga's family is the original one? The pact that bound the Demon King to my people? We read it in the mountains, Zelda says. At the foot of the eighth heroine, Draga is descended directly from the bloodline that birthed Ganon, the demon that hunted us this whole way. Draga fights it, has fought it his whole life. He begged us to come here because he knew only you and your people would understand. He asked you to bring him because he knew our laws. Riju's eyes are bright suddenly with tears, barely held at her lashes. If he's rampant, then he'll be put to death, of course. Of course. She says nothing for a long time. Then, this is the oldest matter of my people. We Gerudo hate unfinished business, after all. Of course it would be personal. I'm so sorry, Zelda whispers. Riju steps forward and takes Zelda's hand between her palms. It's our duty to end it, Zelda. It must be done by Gerudo hands. My Kotame are assembling. Under the eye of the Seven Sisters, on their holy site, there's a ritual for abomination, the trial demonic. If we take Draga there and complete it, if he can stand it, and the two of you are present, Draga thinks it could be enough to break the curse. She looks slowly to Link, to the sword now on his back again. And if it's not enough, Link ignores that and says, "Tell me what you need from us." The water shrine is built into the deepest foundations of Gerudo Town. So deep, Riju has to take them three levels deeper, narrow stone tunnels that wind vertically down, like a well that's widened out to accommodate steps. Bularia waits at the top level. Riju leads them by lantern light, a small paper one scribed with red ink. Zelda touches the walls as she goes, and when she does, she feels runes carved into rock, feels the script vibrating beneath her palm. "The protections are ancient," says Riju, the red light from her lantern illuminating the curved walls. "We built this town on an oasis, what we believe was the old river Gerudo, the one that carved the valley. The waters here run through the city, both powering it and protecting it." "Desert spirits can't cross running water," says Zelda softly. "Most dark spirits can't. There's purification in water, I think you know." Zelda nods, but doesn't say, "I collapsed the earth around Hyrule Castle, so the river would make a barrier around the calamity. It was one of the first things I did when I transformed." But she glances at Link, who's following at her elbow. He's looking at her rather like it's occurred to him as well. Link and Zelda follow Riju until the stairs give way to a flagstone chamber. Unlike the tunnel, it's well lit. Thousands of plain paper lanterns strung along the ceiling, illuminating a lush, floating garden. The whole floor is a knee-deep grid of running water with small floating baskets thick with vegetation. Hanging plants dangle in flowering pots. The walls are carved with troughs filled with soil, and in that soil, vines and flowers grow riotous. The air smells like damp earth and fruit. The water roars gently, filling the air with ambient noise. In the center of the floating garden is a small stone structure. It's domed and smooth, with a single iron door set into the front of it. The platform has iron poles driven into the corners of it, and strung endlessly on hemp string rope are hundreds of paper charms scribed on scarlet paper. They ripple and chime gently, small bells affixed to the string. The dome itself is plastered inch by inch in white warding paper. The iron door has a handle bound over and over in red string, so thick the handle is completely hidden. The loose ends are nailed to the floor, so the door seems the center of a bloody spiderweb. "The water shrine," Riju says grimly, removing her shoes and pulling her skirts up, tucking them briskly into her belt line. "There's more running water to cross here than anywhere else. As much as possible. Draga must protect himself from the eye of the demon. It's going to be hard." Her voice is grim. "The running waters started to burn him." Zelda glances around as she and Link likewise remove their boots. Riju steps into the water, and Zelda can see it ripple around the dark muscle in her calves, a running current. She wades forward, holding the lantern high. There's no other way to reach the shrine. There are 20 other Gerudo women in the room. Their eyes are striped in reds and black, long red hair braided and coiled tight to their heads. Many of them are seated outside the stone shrine, facing it intently. Some of them are burning herbs and braziers. A silent troop, staring at the Hylians let into their sacred chamber. They have spell script on their armor and clothes. Each of them carry a massive hook-end claymore over their shoulders. And when they look at Zelda, she recognizes in them the ranks that Draga wanted to join, a war band of 20 Kotame. They say nothing as Riju leads Link and Zelda through the garden toward the shrine, the red light glittering in the waters as they move. How many signs have there been? Riju asks again as they approach the shrine platform, ducking vines and flowers. All but possession, Zelda whispers. If Draga gives in to the curse, his soul will change. Riju doesn't look back as she speaks. He will become a demon himself. They come to the barrier wall of string and paper. One of the Kotame moves forward then, to Riju's side, and she ducks near to murmur in her chieftain's ear. Riju nods, then slides her arm under one of the low-hanging threads. She lifts it like a curtain, creating a gap that two small Hylians might duck through. Link wordlessly steps through the space, folding at the waist to move under. Zelda takes his hand and follows, feels a staticky drag on her skin as she passes through some invincible sheet of protective magic, and then she's inside the ward barrier. The air inside is moving, a clean wind that catches her pale hair as ribbons around her face. She looks over her shoulder at Riju, barely visible through the paper charms. Tell Draga I've set his name into the census stone, says Riju. It would be worse to go into this without the matter settled. Link startles at that. You did? He won't die with two names, says Riju, her eyes flashing like flint between the wards. He has one, Mare Draga of the Gerudo. She closes her eyes then. That is the last favor I have for my cousin. Link nods. We'll see you in the morning, Riju. She nods back, and the red light of her lantern fades as she wades back into the running waters. Zelda and Link turn to the shrine door. Link's hand is tight on hers as they step carefully between the red lines that hold the door, reaching for the handle. When her fingers touch, there's a snap. All of the lines unwind and fall from the door, cut slack as kite strings. Zelda grasps the handle firmly, moves forward, and enters the shrine. Inside, it's surprisingly bright. The walls are smooth sandstone, the interior of a large dome building. The curving walls rippled with blue light. In the center of the room is a deep, circular pool with shallow shelves carved below the waterline, like a bathhouse pool. The waters swirl and siphon strangely, suggesting even here the water is a current. The bottom of the pool is lined with moonstone, chunks of raw mineral set into the walls, so the entire room is lit by the luminous green-blue glow. Near the door is a basket containing an untouched pile of fruit, bread, and dried meat. A second basket containing what looks like dark gray clothes and amber jewelry. A third basket full of fresh towels and small bottles of what might be soap. Across the room is a large waist-high altar carved as a solid shelf from the wall, the top of it draped in several layers of blankets and pillows. Seated at the foot of this stone shelf, between the pool and the bed, is Draga. He's leaning back against the stone, his legs bent up, arms draped over his knees. He seems like he's dozing a little when the door opens, and when he looks up, the light in his eyes is much brighter than the glow provided by the pool. The green in the iris is unmistakably glowing now. So inhumanly pale, it arrests Zelda where she stands. Link just closes the door behind them, and there's nothing but the murmur of running water.
You're not dead, Draga remarks. Thanks, says Link.
Draga, Zelda says softly, what happened to your legs? He blinks, then glances at his bare feet. The cloth of his pants has been rolled up to his knees, like Link and Zelda did to cross the garden. The skin from his knees down looks red even through his dark complexion, almost boiled.
The waters here are sacred,
he murmurs, almost absent-mindedly.
You have to walk through it to reach the shrine as a first test for spiritual infection.
A smile curls the right side of his mouth.
I couldn't stand it. It burned me. The water here burns me, too.
He gestures to the glowing pool.
They brought all that fruit from the market because I can't drink anything.
His voice hitches.
Sorry.
Zelda and Link both rush to the other side of the room. They hit their knees, arms fastening around Draga from either side. He's hot to touch, just hot enough that it doesn't feel possible, like a fever that should have killed him already. He takes hold of them. His fingers dig into their shoulders, gathering their heads against his body as they, for a moment, just sit there, clinging close as physically possible. And Zelda finally feels that strange divot in her soul smooth over.
I failed the tests.
Draga's breath tightens as he says it aloud.
Zelda, I failed.
That doesn't mean anything, she whispers. Just that a monster dogs your steps. You're still human, Draga. He turns his face into her shoulder, and in Gerudo says,
I don't want to become a demon.
And the fear in his voice sets cold fingers in Zelda's gut. You won't, she says. We won't let you.
When I broke away from you, I felt a hollow, and then something trying to take root where you weren't anymore.
Draga speaks through his teeth, like he'd be losing it if he didn't bite down on every word.
Even now, it's like something burning is still there, and I feel it every time I breathe.
Here he pulls back from them, both of them, pressing his spine against the foot of the bed.
I feel it.
One hand curls inward, clawed against his heart.
Is this what it feels like to become one of them, Zelda? Is this what he felt like?
You're not a demon, Zelda whispers. She takes his head in her hands, pulling his face around until he's forced to meet her gaze. And you're not, Draugmir. Listen to me. You won't become a demon. This ritual tomorrow will break the curse. With Link and I, your people will end the line. We won't give any room in your heart to inhabit. We won't leave you.
Well, that's the curse, isn't it?
Draga's voice is low, a little ragged.
You see how well the trap is baited. If you leave me alone, it comes for me. So you stay close, but I've been made to poison you. I'll kill you by proximity, just like I...
Stop! Zelda shakes him by the shoulders, hard to disrupt him. This is what it feeds on. You mustn't speak like that.
I can't lose you two,
Draga says, not fighting her grip at all.
That would be two families. I will lose my mind.
You won't lose us. Think about that. You have to hope.
I never told you how my family died.
Zelda, frightened, twitches her hands off his shoulders, as if it's her touch that's injecting this desperate macabre into her friend. She looks wildly to Link, but her knight is kneeling, stock still, a complex terror in his face, a layered fear she can't interpret. Draga goes on almost frantically.
My mothers were struck dead by the magics they carved in my defense. Of my three sisters, Isha threw herself from a mountain. Piral was found torn apart by a ritual. My eldest sister, Sumati, the one who best stood a chance against the beast, she succumbed to possession. A legion of spirits made a river of her soul. She died speaking a thousand voices.
He drags his hands down his face, half muffling his words as they slip back to Naburian.
They're all dead, and the one thing they died to stop is going to happen. The only thing I worked to stop my entire life, and it's still going to happen.
Zelda can't figure out what to do with her hands, as if it were the most important thing in this moment. She oscillates rapidly between the impulse to fling her arms around him and the conflicting instinct that he doesn't want to be touched. She doesn't know how to touch him in this moment, where every part of him seems flayed open, every inch of him a stripped nerve laid bare, and her hands fashioned in sea salt and glass. Zelda reaches for him, taking his hands in her grip so, so gently. Draga, you cannot succumb now to despair. Please, we love you. We are with you.
Love doesn't stop monsters.
His eyes flash up, a volcanic heat breathing in them like a coal, then fading.
A sword stops monsters. Or hasn't 1,000 lives taught you anything? How many times do you need to butcher a boar to understand it's what you're fucking here for? Ah!
He breaks off, pulling his hands against his chest and doubling over.
Gods!
Draka? Zelda's hand goes towards his heart, like there's a wound he's clutching. What is it? What are you hearing?
Get away from me!
Draga hisses it in his mother tongue, and the stone shudders. His head comes up, and there's heat behind his teeth, distorting his voice suddenly.
I am your enemy. I always was. Why don't you see that?
Light ignites in Zelda's palms, and she doesn't hesitate. She lunges forward, grabbing Draga at the wrist, and sunshine courses like water from where she's holding him, running down to his elbows as steam burns off the both of them, shimmering and gold. You're not our enemy. Zelda's voice contains the distant roar of the sea. Her hands on Draga's wrists are trembling with the force of her hold. That's the lie. I know it. The axis on which our legend pivots, that we're enemies.
You can't be in love with me.
Draga almost lunges at her, jerking forward. His breath against her face is a furnace, flooded, boiling the air.
You can't.
Those words are cooler. Coals bubbling beneath a wave.
Don't you get it?
Like he's begging.
That's the trap.
Zelda lets go of his wrists, and where her hands gripped him, she leaves a brand in gold. The impression of her fingers seared bright against the dark of his skin. A tattoo facsimile melted down his forearms like paint fused to flesh. She ignores it for now, focuses on Draga. When we first met, you said there was some magic in our meeting, a crossing of power. But that doesn't invalidate the choices we've made. You said to me, you...
What the fuck did I know?
Draga gets up suddenly, standing to pull away from them both and sit on the edge of the low stone slab he'd been sitting against. He sets his elbows on his knees, pressing his face into the palms of his hands.
What did I know about any of this? I was a desert sorcerer still claiming my own fucking name. I don't know anything. I'm just the vessel for Draugmir's curse. I thought I could change my fate, but I don't matter. It's just this thing I'm carrying.
You matter, Zelda hisses, still kneeling. She fits a hand on one bicep, shaking him. You're the most important person in 10,000 years, Draga. You're carrying the very heart of the world, and that would mean nothing except that you're you. You are good, and you're brave, and that makes you the first in centuries to give us a fighting chance at peace. Real peace. A break in the cycle that's trapped Link and I for so long. So don't say that.
I'm not strong, Zelda.
The hell you aren't. If this thing had come to anyone else, it would have consumed them.
It is consuming me.
He doesn't lift his head from his hands.
I'm burning.
You're fighting it, Zelda snaps. You're not destined to fall to the demon. You're not our enemy. You're not a vessel. You're the one protecting the world from a monster. Can't you see that?
That's a pretty way to dress it up.
Draga whispers, low and unfamiliar.
But I would never have taken up such a task. I'm not a hero like you and Link. I'm not someone who would gut myself for my kingdom or my goddess. I'm just the next one in line. Stop making a divine comedy sound noble.
He lifts his head from his hands, but only to look at her. The heat in his gaze is physical, like staring into an open fire.
We're not the same, princess.
Draga, we are the...
The goddess chose you to protect your kingdom. You failed and everything you loved died because of it. The demon chose me to kill your fucking kingdom. I will kill your Hyrule a second time if you don't do your job and stop me. We're not the same in any capacity save that you and I are repeating history.
He switches, suddenly, to a dialect that is not Naburian. But somehow Zelda knows exactly what he's saying when he whispers,
"The difference is, if you fail this time, Queen Zelda, it really will be all your fault."
Zelda, her heart burning in the back of her throat, forgets momentarily how to speak. Draga stares down at her, his eyes holding the dull glow of some ancient infernal thing.
"I'm starting to remember you killing me,"
he says so fucking calmly, the taste of iron on every word.
"You did it over and over again. Do you recall speaking to him in those quiet moments where you weren't tearing each other apart? You'd speak to one another, so familiar. Is that why you didn't tell Link and I the details? Because in the end you knew?"
He leans closer.
"The intimacy of killing? Something even your hero has never felt. In all his indifferent mechanical butchery, he never longed for the things that he murdered."
Link tackles Draga, hits him like a bull flat on his back on the bed. Before Zelda can scream, the sword that seals the darkness is flat across Draga's throat. It burns, brilliant, murderous blue in Link's hands. He's gripping it by the hilt and by the blade at its central ridge near the point of the sword. It's bitten through his leather glove to the palm, blood dripping in the folds of the rucked blanket. The razor's edge is pressed to the underside of Draga's jaw. The light from the sword throws Link's face into a horrible, beautiful relief. The silvery machine blue in his gaze. His fingers gripping the sword, his weight leveraged down, professionally angled for the business of driving it through his friend's trachea. She can feel the monstrous force he would bring into the act, that it would cleave the entire head from the top of the spine. The follow-through is promised in the poise of his position. "Is this what you're after?" Link asks softly, ignoring Zelda's horrified scream for him to stop. His question is for the man he's kneeling over. He presses the flat of the sword a little harder against Draga's throat, getting an instinctive recoil. But there's no emotion on the hero's face as he asks, again, "You want me to do what I always fucking do?" Draga looks surprised. Actually, he makes no moves to resist or defend himself, but lies very still, staring. "Tell me to do it," Link says. His face is very near Draga's. His bangs slip forward, hiding his eyes. "I swear to the goddess I'll kill the monster again if I have to. But if you don't even fight to the dawn, then I'll do it here." His hand on the blade grips tighter, blood pulsing along the edge and running red. "But you have to make me do it." Draga says nothing. Link bares his teeth. "Is it you or the demon talking?" Draga's hands move up from the bed, very, very slowly, then settle on Link's shoulders. "This is your only chance," Link grits out. "If you want it like this, I won't get the nerve again." "Put down the sword," Draga murmurs. Link maintains his tension for a beat, another beat, three. Then he releases his grip on the blade. He sits back on his heels, all that horrific intent cut like a cord, and the blade slips from slack fingers to clatter off the side of the bed. It lies still glowing on the sandstone, but dully now, fading. Link kneels on the bed, his hands braced against the top of his thighs, head lowered, his breathing heavy. He exhales slowly as Draga sits up and moves back a little, so they're seated facing one another. Link on his knees, Draga shifting so he's seated cross-legged, posture anxious.
"Link?"
Link shakes his head in a way that suggests he's not going to be talking.
I'm sorry that I wasn't thinking clearly. Look at me.
Link lifts his chin slightly. Draga slowly raises a hand to the other man's face, gingerly pushing his hair out of his eyes a little. Link's fists tighten against his thighs.
You're not a weapon. You're not a sword.
Draga moves his hands to Link's shoulders.
You're some idiot from Lanryu who gets weird about salmon risotto and jumps off buildings.
When Link just tenses further, Draga goes on.
I am scared to death of tomorrow, but I won't ask you to kill anyone you love.
Link's shoulders kind of jerk, his mouth pulling in a grimace. His hands come up, signing.
You're not the only one risking madness.
I know.
I never told you how my family died.
I know.
Link glares. Then stop saying that shit.
That was fear, my friend. I'm sorry.
He looks at Zelda.
I'm sorry. None of that was true.
Some of it was true. Zelda stills the quaver in her voice. I fought Ganon 100 years. Of course I talked to him. She's aware that her eyes are hot and blurry, that tears are running over and down her face. Don't speak with his voice, please. It's not yours, Draga.
If I speak in that voice again, it's not mine.
He closes his eyes, drops his forehead against Link's, and carefully fits his hands to the hero's head. There's gold on Draga's arms still, like melted metal running liquid from wrist to elbow. It's so shimmering bright against his skin that it makes the rest of his complexion seem inky dark. Draga doesn't seem to have noticed, though. He murmurs.
You were right, Zelda. We should have rushed things.
And she moves forward then. Zelda tries not to remember herself saying things. We have all the time in the world that are no longer true. There is light in her fingers as she crosses the space, a shimmer of something in her palm as she presses it against Draga's chest, beneath his collarbone, and pushes slightly. Link lets her put space between them, but he's at her side, like her shadow. Zelda climbs up on the bed, reaches down, and so carefully takes Draga's hands between her palms. From her fingers, where she touches him, metallic gold runs like paint down his knuckles, over his palms, until his fingers are coated in its brightness. In the dim light of the shrine, the strange markings hold their own persisting luminescence. Zelda lets go of him so he can raise one gold slick hand, opening and closing his fingers as light flickers in the color. Draga stares.
What is it?
A spell, I think. Like the one I used in the valley to protect you. Zelda swallows. Does it hurt? It doesn't feel like it should.
No.
Take off your shirt. I'm going to put them everywhere, if you trust me.
I do.
He says that like it hurts.
I'll let you do anything.
The words make her sick. But with longing and rage, because it shouldn't be like this. Draga takes his shirt off methodically, joylessly drawing it over his head and handing it to Link. He sits cross-legged on the bed in front of her, and she drags her hands from his throat down his chest, her fingertips leaving lines of gold that shiver and straighten against his skin. She marks him in light. Scores shivering lines across his ribs, up his spine, over his shoulder blades, and down his bare arms. She paints his palms in gold. She touches the burns on his leg and watches them fade under her touch. She cups her palm around the back of his right ankle and beneath the sole of his foot, dragging the heel of her hand over skin until it's coated in gold. She runs her hands up his leg to the back of his lower thigh, where his pant leg is rolled as high as it will go. Will you take off the rest? she asks, her palms dripping light. I think it's better if it's an interconnected web like a net in the sea. Am I making sense? I don't know.
I wish I'd met you two sooner,
Draga says. She swallows. I know.
I wish we had more time.
Link signs.
We know.
He laughs bitterly.
I'm sorry I didn't just stay down by the lake with you two that day.
Zelda feels her eyes getting hot. Me too. Draga does what she asks, but both she and Link turn away until he's settled again. Resolute in a fashion, but not a comfortable one. Link hands him a blanket while Zelda remains turned away. When she looks again, he's bunched it into a pile of folds and shadow at the join of his thighs, the only modesty left now. He's got his arms draped over his knees, sitting with them slightly drawn up in front of him. The dim light lays lines of dark muscle into shadow and relief. His hands are joined in front of him, fingers tangled tight. It's the most unclothed she's ever seen him, and she hates that. Draga, she says, it's not, this is messy magic, it...
I know, Draga says. I know what sources it draws from.
You said love doesn't stop monsters. Draga shows him her hands, the skin of her palms humming with soft light. This is old, old magic, and I don't know it well, but let me try.
Then try, Draga says. Because it's you, I want you to try.
Lie back. She climbs onto the bed, the altar pretending to be a bed, beside Draga as he does what she says, pulling himself up and lying back. He looks up at her. Zelda puts two hands on either side of his head, and when she bends toward him, her hair hangs like a curtain, pooling by his ear. One hand moves to his chest. She touches him, and it's like she has her hand in his heart. Her fingers curled like a wireframe around the burning core of him, and his pulse is in her blood as she says, in his language,
I won't let anything happen.
And when he starts to say something, she kisses him, and there's light on her lips, on her tongue, like water he swallows and swallows until he's gasping, mouth aching under hers. Zelda takes Draga's wrists in her hands, presses them into the blankets over his head, hears his breath hitch when she does it. Part of her thinks he looks different like this, submitting like this. The fragmentation arouses a response in her. She takes his chin between her fingers, tilting his head back where she can watch the luminous green in his eyes flicker like fairy lights in the dark retinal mirror behind each iris. The dark green color in his stare is lit up from the inside, a dim fire burning all the oxygen in a black kiln. The heat coming off him is inhuman. She knows it is, but she barely feels it.
I won't let you become a demon.
Zelda says it against his skin. It's liquid gold on her lips. She moves her other hand down Draga's body, fingertips following a warm path south. His skin against hers is sun dark and smooth, solid. He's got a Gerudo's natural but improbable build, all muscle and density, but hot like human skin shouldn't be. He smells like metal when he shouldn't. She tastes iron on her tongue.
You will not become a demon.
She kisses him, laves the promise like holy water until she swallows that too. We love you, and you cannot become a demon. Her words are wires, a metal spell she's winding around him. Magic more native to the fire that lives in his bones, feeding off it. His mouth is hot, but she touches his lips with her fingers and feels him taste the sweat from them, takes her fingers on his tongue. And when she starts to speak, she says in Naburian,
We have all the time in the world.
She kisses him to cleanse the lie. She kisses him until she can't taste iron anymore, until his lips are pressed with messy gold leaf where she's touched him. Draga lets her do it. He lets her drag her fingers across his cheek, smear magic like war paint. She cuts slices of bright liquid metal against his skin, her fingers leaving sunlight in lines across his jaw, his throat, his collarbones. She presses the gentle glow from her thumb against his closed eyelids and pulls a line back across his temple into his hair. She lines each rib in arcane geometrics. She connects line by line, a network weave laid into skin like a net into the dark sea. Her clumsy hands smearing heat and hurry that smooths into purpose. Runes spelling protection across the plane of his shoulder blades and spine. Does it hurt?
No.
He jerks when her fingers hook slightly, and her nails drag gold down his ribs.
Keep going.
She can feel the tension in him. Not fear, but a self-restraint. So she slides her hand down his chest, then his belly, downward, until her hand slides slick between his thighs. He's smooth and flat until he's not. Her fingers brushing near before she hooks her hand inward along the line where his thigh meets his lower body. She presses her palm hot there, and her knuckles brushing, but not quite touching him where he's covered and unknown to her. She just presses gently, guiding her friend's legs open at her coaxing, her fingers drawing a line with two fingers down to his knee. Draga sits up then. He's breathing unsteadily, the bright red of his hair looking finger-wrecked and unsettled.
Zelda.
I'm almost done. She kisses him along the line of his thigh, feels him shiver. It's something I'm remembering as I'm doing it. She runs her hand from his knee up towards the line where his hip curves in. Relax. We've got you. She places her palm along the inside of his unmarked thigh, her handprint melting sunlight into skin. Her other hand braces, almost as a restraint against Draga's stomach. Hold still, she says. Draga doesn't move, just watches her. He asks,
is it enough?
Zelda breathes hard, her hands shake, the light inside them flickering. It has to be. Sweat drips from her chin. It has to be enough.
You're pale.
It's everything I have right now. It's... She blinks a few times, shaking her head. Link? He's at her side. Was, apparently. Always there. And he puts a hand on her shoulder. With one hand, he signs.
How long do we have?
Until the dawn, she murmurs. Draga, gently, takes her hand between his palms, touches the back of it where the shard of the Triforce glows, a heartbeat against her knuckles.
You're cold, he rumbles.
Before she can argue, he brings his cupped hands to his mouth and breathes that bizarre open oven warmth into the space between them, warming her fingers. She thinks of him on the road, so long ago, casually warming a loaf of bread at breakfast for her. The thought brings tears stinging to her eyes, and she longs with a desperation like drowning for just another breath of such a morning, one more dawn on a boring, sun-dappled road. We have till dawn.
At dawn we face the demon, Zelda. You should... rest or prepare.
Don't tell me what I should do, Zelda rasps. This might be our last chance, the last time for another 10,000 years that we three get to be together. Damn our souls, if it's just three pieces of our world trying to bind closed again, like a broken fucking thing trying to be whole. But I love you. The words ache in her throat. I love you both. And the gods don't have any say in that. So, please? Her fingers hurt, clasping his hand in hers. Please? Draga's breath tastes like metal. His kiss like a coin on her tongue being swallowed.
Then stay.
he says. So they do.